Another cool thing, though, that we do with our irrigation, we, you know, a lot, with a lot of these higher fields that we're where we grow are growing higher yields. We're getting a lot more into the fertigation. Not so much nitrogen. Doing a lot more potassium micronutrients. I see a lot of benefit doing micronutrients almost more than I do seeing nitrogen. Zinc and boron, probably the biggest ones through fertigation that hit the biggest.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Grow a carbon crop below your row crop. Add carbon to your balance sheet with Loam Bio. Revenue grew, so did your hours. The owner's box, buy back 20 a week. Stop hiring for problems automation can solve. Start with Elevate Agents. Don't hire another VA stuck in 2015. Hire a remote AI specialist from Latin who runs AI tools, works in your time zone, and helps your team move faster. Schedule your free strategy call at www.wisevas.io. Zentrix OS, the business operating system built for teams who are serious about goals, tasks, and measurable results. One platform to run your entire operation. Zentrix Insights. The right person in the right seat starts with knowing how your team is actually wired. Visit ZentrixInsights.com.
Welcome to the Crop Science Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm Brian Arnell, and I'm coming to you from the campus of Oklahoma State University. Today, I'm excited to have on Jake Droz. Jake's a Michigan corn, soybean, and sorghum farmer. As a second-generation farmer and an owner and partner in his farm with his dad and brother, Jake's in the fields alongside with his dad and brother on a regular basis. They concentrate on crop production and fertility, knowing that their soils hold the most potential to push yields to new levels. They have won the NCGA Yield Contest for the state of Michigan a handful of times, and they strive to beat their own personal best every year. They rely heavily on networking and spreading knowledge to help someone else down the road. Jake, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Yes, thank you. I guess you said where you're coming from. I'm right here out of the shop, right here in Mersin, Michigan, just northwest of Kalamazoo by about 20, 25 minutes.
Fantastic. So, Jake, tell us a little bit. Give us the 100,000-foot overview of the farm.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we're about 15. If you were to drive straight, we're 15 miles right off of Lake Michigan. Obviously, that has a lot of challenges with lake. We get about roughly anywhere from 120 to 180 inches of snow starting in November just because of lake effect. Really screws us up. If you would like to, a lot of people, this might ring a bell here with some people, but we don't do hardly any no-till. The lake effect snow compacts our ground so hard. It's really tough. Makes harvest really difficult. Last couple of years we finished harvesting in February and March and January. And so that's just the way it is with our little area here. We grow on anything from muck to sand to clay to loam. Our home farm here has 23 different soil types. But, I guess that's what makes it a challenge. And I guess that's why we keep coming back every year, right?
Yeah. If it's, some folks in the U.S. have it easy, I'll say. Not you or not us, but there's this one
pocket. You said it.
Yeah. There's this one pocket that they get a little easy. So tell us about the crop rotations y'all have going on up there.
Yeah. So most of our irrigated ground, we run corn on corn. It seems to be the most profitable for us. This year we are trying a rotation of more soybeans and some irrigated stuff. Prices just aren't swinging the way we'd like. So you're trying some of these fields, you're just trying to lose the least. For the most part, I mean, we have some corn fields. Our best overall corn field, we are 42 years corn on corn, and our average yields are getting better. I would attribute it to more microbial work over the past 10 years. Being more efficient with fertilizer, doing those sorts of things, just making the soil a little healthier while tilling.
So I want to, you create a bunch of questions. So what are some of the aspects? Because for me, I've never been, we're in a country where there's some hard till no-tillers. They are no-till or die. I always see that there are tools in the tool belt that have to be utilized, and sometimes that is tillage, and sometimes that's no-till, and there's not a one-size-fits-all. So I'm just going to let you know I'm game with that, completely understand, especially in your environment. What have you done in the realm of soil health, soil conservation within the tillage system? Is it timing of tillage? Is it, I can't imagine you have a ton of time for a cover crop, because you're telling me earlier you're really late on harvest. So it's not like you get a lot of time to grow a cover before you snowpack.
Yeah. So cover crop, we have tried cover crops and we have not gotten the timing down that we want yet. We've put them on some fields around home and we didn't end up planting those fields for 2 years because it kept it too wet. Couldn't even get the sprayer out to terminate it or anything. We'd love to see them work. We would. And we would love to, obviously no-till's great, you know, take away that cost of the equipment cost. What else we're doing though, as far as that is, you know, we're trying to, you know, we'll run a ripper, you know, we're not moldboard plowing. We're not doing anything like that. Trying to leave some residue on top, mulching it. You know, we're actively looking into strip tilling whenever we can at least try it or rent one, you know, just attempt some acres at it, you know, keep some of that stuff on top. But, you know, we're also getting into biologicals, putting out compost and stuff like that, and getting into these teas and all these digesters. And, you know, so that's just some of the stuff we've been doing. I think it's been paying off. We've been able to lower a lot of our fertilizer rates and a lot of these bugs. You know, a lot of this stuff is, it used to sound like hokum and snake oil, but man, when you find the spot where it fits, man, they work.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm kind of curious, and can you describe if strip till were to work for you, what's that timing of running that strip till unit and then getting the corn in? I see you being a tight window. So
that's a great question. That's something I'm still trying to figure out, because obviously, you know, in ag, help's a big deal right now. And finding help's hard, you know, and you're looking at, if you're spring tilling here, you're looking at having to buy another tractor, a strip tiller, and you're trying to find another guy now too. And so, you know, are we looking at maybe a fall strip with no fertilizer and then come back hopefully earlier in the spring to freshen it up? You know, is it something like that? You know, are we looking to do stripping without fertilizer just as a conservation practice in general? You know, then the next conversation part comes up, knife or coulter, you know, and in our clay, I don't have that answer yet.
Yeah, I could see that. We do. So we do a lot in our high plains. So Oklahoma's a weird state. We go from 300 foot above sea level to 3,500 foot. We got 66 inches of rain and we have 6 inches of rain. And so, you know, our strip tills on the high plains where they get about 12 to 18 inches of rain, they're running 2 foot of irrigation. So, you know, you talk about irrigation, I'm thinking we turn on that pivot somewhere around V4, V5. They actually pre-water up there. So you want 4 foot of profile, and you have to do that with the pivot because you're not going to get it in rain. So you want 4 foot of profile. You plant, get the crop up to about, you know, 4 or 5 leaf, and then you turn the pivot on. And it really doesn't turn off until black layer. So tell me about, I assume that's not, y'all don't need 2 foot of water through the pit.
that is most definitely not our normal here. We do run, if I remember the last count, is anywhere from 75 to 85 pivots. Nothing to the size out there, you know, a lot of 1 tower to 8 tower pivots.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, a lot of these fields, if we don't, you know, we'll start watering roughly side dress maybe around July 4th or so. And there's a lot of times you won't shut them off until mid September. We try to put down 1 to 3 inches a week. A lot of this ground, if we don't irrigate it, it will be, I guess you can't really get less than zero, but, but yeah, it's just a lot of our, obviously the pivot ground is all on sand. So obviously that, you know, that's why we're
irrigated. Gotcha. Okay. How deep to your water source? Are you pulling surface? Are you going down? Where's your water source?
Yeah. So we have a big, big aquifer, right around this area. That's why Southern Michigan, Northern Indiana's, I think I'm correct saying this, it's the biggest seed corn growing region in the world. And that's why it has a huge aquifer, right there. And so we're at least close enough able to still pull out of some of that, so we get to that. We have a couple that pull out of rivers, but not hardly many of those anymore.
Do you have to go super deep for it, or is it?
Yeah, we're anywhere from 150 to 350 feet, which I guess isn't terrible. Probably compared down by you, it's probably farther.
Yeah, we've got some that drop 800 to 1,000.
Yeah, so I guess it's not that bad here.
For your pumps, are you running like gas, diesel, electric? Is it a kind of a mix depending on location?
We're trying to hook up to as many electric right now as possible. Obviously now, but yeah, we do have some that are diesel. It just can't get three phase to it. We'll have some on phase converters and we'll run those. I don't like running them, but we have them. But yeah, I'd say for the most part, we're probably on electric. For efficiency wise through our pivots, we do check, we rain gauge each tower on a lot of these pivots. Mm-hmm. And we don't run drops like you guys do out there because we just don't get the evaporation.
Yeah.
We do run a lot on the phone to, keeps us working on other things.
Yep.
So stuff like that. We do a lot of that kind of tech. And irrigation. Yeah.
Just to give you an idea, at our peak, so if you look at us like VT, R1, peak demand, peak heat out in those high plains, we can easily have 3/4+ ET per day, 3/4 inch. So
that pivot can't even run fast enough.
No, that's why we pre-water. And then the goal is in a normal year by black layer, you are at zero. And kind of like you said, you can't go beyond zero. It feels like you do.
Well, so we were down in Oklahoma. This was probably 10, 12 years ago now. We have a good friend down there in Okmulgee, I think is what the town is called.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. But, he was showing us around some of his fields, and it's like, man, this ground is so pretty. And he said, yep, it has the prettiest corn until July.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we talk about. We got the greatest soil without any water. And then if you go to the part of the state that has good water, it has the worst soil that you can imagine. Just a shallow clay junk. And so where we have water, we have no soil. Where we have good soil, we don't have the rain. So it's one of those things.
So, another cool thing, though, that we do with our irrigation, we, with a lot of these higher fields that where we grow our growing higher yields, we're getting a lot more into the fertigation, not so much nitrogen, doing a lot more potassium micronutrients. I see a lot of benefit doing micronutrients almost more than I do seeing nitrogen. Zinc and boron, probably the biggest ones through fertigation that hit the biggest.
Yep. I could see that, especially in your ground.
Yeah. Obviously the lower CECs, we can move needles pretty easy.
Oh yeah. Looking at our time, I want to get in a little bit and talk a little bit about your bean farming. What differentiates the corn ground from the bean ground or that rotation?
Oh man, yeah, our bean farming. I would not claim us to be great bean farmers at all. we might have good beans on a few fields here or there. We're going to push a couple of fields this year that haven't been beans in 10, 15 years. And when I say push, we're hoping the pivot average is 80. I mean, for us, that's a big deal. Right here in our little niche area, we're lucky if our beans average 40. The deer population is just so bad through here.
Gotcha.
One interesting bit for us up in this area, though, we have the Plenish program, high oleic soybeans, so we can take them right to a dairy and we get that premium, and then we don't have to store them either. And so that pays pretty well for us to do.
Yeah, I can imagine that. So your beans are more of a necessity of a rotation, or you're just needing to switch it up.
Unfortunately, we would love to be better at it, but it's just like every time you try something to get better, it seems like Mother Nature throws you back two more steps.
You also mentioned in your intro sorghum, and man, we grow a fair amount of sorghum in Oklahoma. I was not prepared for you to drop the Milo term.
Yeah. And I know those guys out west, they probably don't like us eastern guys growing sorghum and stuff like that. And I know, but it's such a pretty crop. there is a little market here for us in I can start that over there. I was kind of, my nose itched. There's a little bit of a market for us here for grain sorghum. We take it south about 2 hours for a bird seed. So it literally, It goes south of here, 2 hours, gets packaged in a Scott's bird food pack, comes right back to True Value, just 5 miles from our house.
I can see that. That itchy grass. You guys like making sure that you have something you combine and get a little itchy at the end of the day.
But it's also fun to see how high I can get a deal too, and it's always fun to, you know, play with that contest they have.
So talk about that. What do you do in your country to get sorghum to produce? Because you're going, and I want you to spend a little bit of time kind of talking about that contest. And what are you doing that you're allowed to talk about that you want to give away? No trade secrets, but, you know, what are some of the things you play with?
Oh, yeah, there's nothing on that. I mean, it's, hey, somebody, you know, let's talk about that for a minute. People have helped me and my dad and my brother to get us to where we are. And now it's our job to give that back as well. And so, so let's go on that then. The sorghum thing, you know, Stephen Albracht from Texas, and I should say the late Stephen Albracht, you know, he always taught me a few things, you know, hey, plant a little thicker than what they might recommend. You know, when that sorghum gets to V4, V5, you know, spray a fungicide on it, you know, put a micro pack on it. Right before heading, we go out and we'll spray another Quilt XL. Or a generic of sorts. And we'll put a micro pack out, maybe just a tad bit of boron, and we'll put an insecticide out. I don't get sorghum midge here, but I also don't want to take a chance.
Yeah.
So I do spray Mustang Max on it then too. We do not have sugarcane aphids up here yet, but I do know in Indiana they have them. So that's kind of what we do. We try to harvest. We don't get sorghum does not dry down here very good. So we harvest around anywhere from 16 to 20%.
Okay. You using any desiccants or anything to any harvest aids?
I have not, but the Pioneer guys in the sorghum division have told me that would help me quite a bit. Just as far as getting my plants to dry down.
We do a fair amount of that to help us, one, to time harvest out, because running like a glyphosate or something along those lines, or a desiccant, a salt desiccant, we know the time frame on dry down, and if we can kind of predict the weather, we know that time frame. So I can run. I know that if I'm spraying, I got about 7 to 8 day window, and if I spray at the black layer point in about 8 days in a normal dry down, I could be ready to rock and roll. So we can time out where I want to be in the fields, and it also for us, we're coming back in a lot of the times with maybe a wheat or something else. Like we can cut sorghum. And a week later, if we got moisture, we can run a wheat for either grazing or double crop. But if that sorghum's green, dude, a week or two of it still running in our summer when it's not raining, that crop could just dry out the ground. So the desiccant stops it from ET and saves us a little bit of moisture in that time frame.
Okay. We're going to plant ours probably end of this week, and we're not going to harvest it till basically Thanksgiving weekend.
Do you look for any particular ground for sorghum? Is it your lighter ground, tighter ground?
Yeah, we try to go on lighter ground that's that has had previous tougher soybean or corn crops, ground that has a little more deer damage. I know they sell sorghum for deer plots, but wherever we plant grain sorghum, the deer seem to avoid the field until it snows.
Yeah.
It's really strange.
That is strange, given what we see. I'm kind of curious, where are the genetics coming out of? I'm assuming it's further south.
I would guess so. So I do plant, we do plant 100% Pioneer seed. So I plant Pioneer grain sorghum variety 86P20. I believe that's 106 day, what they call 106 day sorghum. And it said it comes out of Texas. So I would guess most of those genetics come out of down there.
They do. And I was wondering I've been by, you should go by those breeder fields. You talk about pretty. You should take a trip. Pioneer ought to bring you down there so you can go to West Texas. One, West Texas is a whole nother Texas, but you go to West Texas and see it during, you know, grain filler post right before harvest. It is insane to see all those circles of seed sorghum, and the way they manage that is beautiful.
We had a field a few years ago, averaged 150 bushel, which is really sweet. And we were getting 3-4 calls for wedding pictures and graduation pictures and stuff out next to these fields.
We've got one of our farmers that loves to do the sorghum growers contest, Zach Rendell. He's up in the northeast part of the state. He does the same thing. And so he does it in the region, right? So we got a lot of sorghum out west, but he's about the only one in the area because he knows he could win that northeast really easy. But yeah, I've been noticing lately, he's a younger guy. His wife is really intelligent as far as marketing what they do. They throw some canola. They have some sunflower. They'll do not big. They're, you know, a 40-acre patch of flower or something. But every time they do something, they're given like a couple weeks notice. Hey, guess what? We're going to have canola flowering in 2 weeks. And so they go to Facebook and advertise for, and they'll open up a little area to allow them to come and take pictures on. Because when they first started doing canola, people just so randomly showed up and just rolling out in the middle of the fields.
Oh, yeah.
That they had to have something to go here for a good picture.
But yeah. Yeah, no, and it's, you know, like I said, we've been doing it for 10 years, and it started out kind of as a joke. I mean, because we were losing the corn contest so many times, and I'm like, man, I want to go to Commodity Classic.
Yeah.
I love going. But yeah. I want to go on Pioneer's Dime.
Yeah, and, exactly.
So we started doing that, and yeah, it just turned into I really like growing it. It's really fun to watch it grow.
Oh, yeah. All right. I want to transition. We got a couple minutes. And this is something that I've always find interesting. How do you and your dad and brother work together? What is that? Is there each of you have your own area? Are you kind of working as a blend? What's your operation like?
Yeah. Yeah. And so this is where it's. Yeah, I really like talking about this because then I can give thanks to all of them because we all play our good part, too. And really include my mother and my sister-in-law in it too. I mean, my sister-in-law, man, I could never thank her enough. I really couldn't. She always thinks I'm joking and I'm just not. But yeah, so I mean, my dad does a lot of the grain work, marketing stuff. You know, because a lot of that stuff out in the grain system, he built all that stuff. He did all of it, you know. But he does a lot of shop work, he does a lot of welding, he's a hell of a welder, and My brother, you know, my brother does a lot of the books, the crop insurance. Him and his wife do a lot of the financials, and which is really great because I swear I have undiagnosed dyslexia.
Yeah,
which I guess in a fun way lets me do the fun stuff of scouting and seeing those niche things, right? So, but every morning the three of us try to get together and try to get a plan of what's going on for the day and who's got going on what and who's going to go where. And Ryan and I, we talk almost, it seems like, nonstop on the phone, trying to figure out, okay, what are we going to do here? What's going to happen? This. And yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. We probably butt heads every now and then.
Yeah.
Maybe once every couple months, you know, but it's all just to make each other better. You know, it's just, you know, because that's just how it goes some days. You know, somebody might be having a bad day and you don't know that. And
So I'm curious, like when you're looking at a farm and it needs to be something, you know, you're trying to make the decision, comes up, it's got to be corn, sorghum, or soy. Does dad have the final say, or how does that look? Because, you know, I know a couple farms where grandpa has a final say.
Yeah, we did have one this year. I think in the end, I think my mother said she didn't, she wanted to have her fence back in her backyard because dad did tell us we were going to plant soybeans here at home. And he did look at Ryan and I, and he did say, I think you're going to plant corn here.
I like that.
So, like I said, it's all in fun and it's all just, you know, it's no different than any partnership, but really, we really all work really good together. And, you know, we've all come a long way. We were with the other half of our family, who's the Pioneer dealer. We were with them for many years. My dad and my mom started with them and everything too. And, you know, they wanted to go their own direction and we wanted to do ours. And so that's why we went separate ways, and that's okay. You know, we're, like I said, they're a Pioneer dealer right across the driveway here, and they do a great job for us getting the hybrids that we want and making sure we place things right where we need them. I could never thank them enough for the job that they do, or Matt Davis from Pioneer. You know, they all do a great job.
It's time for our famous three.
WiseNetics turns podcast airtime into brand authority
We don't sell ads, we elevate voices. If you're ready to boost your authority in the industry, access wisenetics.com and speak with a brand authority specialist. Let's transform expertise into influence, starting now.
I think I could probably talk to you for another half hour, but they've got me on a tight scope here. So let's roll
wrap up.
No, it's been great. So where do you go for resources? What are your go-to resources?
Honestly, my go-to resources, networking with other growers in the area. I know they don't want plugs, but I'm sorry. We are part of a peer group, the Total Acre Group, talking that gets us out to network with other growers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I grew up with David Hula and his kids and mm-hmm. their family, and they're like family to us now. And so having David Hula to talk to he's like a second dad to me. And so, you know, we talk a lot, and he's helped us so much. Guys like Bob Little and we talked earlier, Chris Ledbetter, growing up with those guys, you know, all those people helped shape us into where we are today, you know. We go to other meetings, you know, Michigan State has meetings, Purdue has meetings. You know, we'll go to some of that stuff. But yeah, that's a lot of it's networking.
That's fantastic. So what do you do in your free time? Because I know a farmer like you has all the free time in the world.
Well, unfortunately, I'm a Detroit Red Wings fan. And while we kind of stink now for the last 10 years, my wife and I, we just had our first baby. And so little Madeline, or as David Hula gave her the nickname Hybrid. little Hybrid. She has a strict rule of keeping my wife and I up at night. So that's what we're doing in our free time. And that's cool. She's great. And Chelsea B's doing great too. And, you know, she does a good job of taking care of her and stuff while we're planting. And I could never thank her enough for what she does as a mother and everything.
And wrap up, where do people go to find out more about your farm?
They can find our farm. Believe it or not, we have a website. DurosFamilyGrain.com. I am on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. If you try to friend me, I promise eventually I will friend you back. I'm just not very good at it. So, I do enjoy posting, you know, pictures of corn and where we are in the season. And I honestly, the last thing I do want to say for this whole thing, I hope somebody can take away from this. Don't be ever afraid to reach out, whether to me or anybody. I love trying to help and trying to make somebody better. You know, that's what it's all about, right? So people helped me, and now it's my turn.
Absolutely. Well, folks, that wraps up another episode of the Crop Science Podcast Show presented by Wisenetics. Thanks for joining us today with our guest, Jake Droz, Michigan corn, soybean, and sorghum farmer. As always, hit that subscribe button if you want to get notifications every time a new podcast drops. Share this video if you enjoyed it. Share it with peers, friends, or just somebody you think needs to hear the message. Finally, leave us a comment if you have a suggestion for a new guest or if you have a question for an old guest. Jake, I want to say again, I've greatly enjoyed the time visiting with you today. Thank you for taking the pause in planting season.
Yeah, thanks. I this was fun. Now go ahead and smash his like button.
I love it.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.